everyone, and welcome to a brand new episode of The Wrap right here on the Fight Game Media Network. Happy Tuesday morning to you all as you're back here recapping WWE Crown Jewel going down in Saudi Arabia this past Saturday on Peacock, and for the first time ever, Monday Night Raw also being filmed the very next day in Saudi Arabia as well, as the road to Survivor Series continues. I'm Keela Cash, and by my side as always is my co-captain, my right hand, the sometimes advocate for the rapidly improving Miss Jada Parker from NXT. I bring to you back on the Wrap as always the one, the only, Salty Scott Young. Welcome back, Salty.
Thank you for having me. As always, it's a pleasure to chop it up and talk all things WWE. I look forward to the conversation we're going to have. And yeah, I think it's going to be another good show.
Yes. And, you know, we got to do what we got to do on this show before we dive into all things WWE. We got to do our little NBA sidebar as we talk about the Western Conference standings. But before I get to that, I do want to get to a game that aired a few days ago that involved an absolute mollywhopping of the Lakers, courtesy of the Cleveland Cavaliers, to the point they asked for dear sweet Bronny to check into the game, and he gave the people what they wanted, which was a bucket.
Yeah, you know, I took the L, came back and won the next game. So, yeah, it's going to be an up and down season with no bench. It's going to be hard for LeBron to, be able to do what he does, to do, you know, the 16 and 4 minutes and stuff like that. So, it's going to be hard for him to recreate all that stuff. But, yeah, it was good for Bronny. He's going to get that everywhere he goes. I figure every crowd, whether it's a blowout, them getting blown out or them blowing somebody out, you're going to hear, "We want Bronny chance."
Yes, during garbage time,
yep.
Which is fine. You know, you want to get him out there, get some experience, get some exposure, you know, hit some buckets, get some rhythm out there before he goes to the G League, which makes sense to me. So I thought it was a nice moment in Cleveland where LeBron made his name, and now you get to see his son go out there and ball out, and maybe in an outside chance situation years down the road, maybe little Bronny could be playing for the Cleveland Cavaliers. You never know.
Yeah, and he'll have a few of his high school teammates in the league by then. So there could be a nice little reunion on the horizon for him.
Yes, I do see that down the road as well. And I would be remiss if I don't talk about the Western Conference standings as they stand right now. And there are some shocks here. Number one, we got the Thunder, 6-0. Number two, my Warriors, 6-1. Very impressive. Number three, the Suns, 5-1. Number four, the Mavericks, 4-2. The Lakers, 4-3. The Grizzlies, 4-3. The Timberwolves batting 500, 3-3. The Spurs are 3-3. The Rockets are 3-3. The Nuggets, surprisingly, are 3-3 as well, as the Kings are 3-3. And the Pelicans are 3-4. So as predicted, the West is 12 deep, especially when it comes to play-in possibilities heading into the spring. But we know this won't stand for long. Some of these teams that are in the play-in spot right now very early are going to scrap their way into the top five eventually.
Yeah, it's way too early. You know, we also got to take into consideration who all these teams are playing. That goes for us as the Lakers as well. You know, we had Detroit and then we played Toronto. So that's two games right there. Bottom feeder teams. So it's early, but I'll take it. You know, we don't have to accept any cookies to look at our standings when you go online. So I'll take it for right now.
Okay. And then the East, the Cavaliers are 8-0. That snuck up on me out of nowhere. 8-0 is crazy for them. The Celtics are 7-1. The Knicks are 3-2. The Heat are 3-2. The Bulls are 3-3. It's kind of like it's the East. It's very average right now, very mid. The Magic, they lost my guy, Banchero, for a bit due to an injury. They're 3-4. Nets 3-4. Hawks 3-5. Whatever. Pistons 3-5, Pacers 2-4. But let's talk about the bottom feeding team, the Bucks, dead last, 1-6. I saw my Bleacher Report alert go off saying Giannis could be on the block to be traded at some point this season. Do I believe that? No. Dame would get traded first and Doc would get fired.
Nah, Doc ain't going nowhere. They ain't trying to pay another coach. And they'll probably keep Dame because I think he's got less of on the contract. I could be wrong about that. But yeah, Giannis ain't going nowhere because, you know, teams will be lined up to get him, but you're not going to get anything worthy of a haul. If you got four first round picks for Rudy Gobert, I'm going to need all your picks for Giannis.
Yes.
First, second. For the next 5 years.
Yes.
And then your best player. So
yes.
You're not going to get any recoup back. So Giannis ain't going nowhere. Dame ain't going nowhere because nobody's really going to want to take that on unless you can. Now, I could see them letting Dame go.
Yes.
You know, and just taking that contract on and doing something like that, buying him out if they wanted to do something like that. But yeah, Giannis ain't going nowhere and Dame ain't getting traded either. So, and Doc ain't going nowhere either. They stuck.
They're stuck.
Yeah, they where they are. But I think they'll be fine. They're going to end up in the 4-5 seed. They're not going to miss the playoffs. They're not going to miss the play-in. They'll be fine. Come middle of the year. Let's not forget, Middleton's not playing. So things are still getting adjusted. There will be a trade on that team at some point. I see them finishing. Four is way too high. I see them finish about 6-7, but you're not going to want to see them in the playoffs. So I think they'll be fine.
You will want to see them in the playoffs because you would beat them in the first round. You will.
You don't want to see Dame and Giannis in the first round. Not in the East. You'd
they
rather
saw them last year, and look what happened.
But they were hurt.
And?
That's... If Giannis isn't hurt, they're doing damage in the playoffs last year.
With Doc as the coach that you would trust to guide them.
Doc can only handicap them so much. When it comes to like those first couple of rounds, that's all players. And I think you got a healthy Giannis, healthy Dame. Yeah, you're winning those first couple of series. I'm going to be honest, I don't want to see them. I would not want to see them in those early rounds, especially those younger teams that are going to be on top. Nah, I don't want to see them.
Okay. I'm going to make a bold prediction. And we'll reassess this in maybe a month or two. By Christmas, if this is not resolved in terms of a turnaround, I do see Doc being fired. I just can't justify being 1-6, dead last. You got to go streaking. Things are not going to get easier heading into the latter parts of the season. So I say by Christmas, if they're not at least in the eighth spot after going on a good streak to rectify this, someone's getting fired. And I will say one of the players on this team is getting traded because something's got to give at some point. 1-6 is bad. Being dead last in the conference is bad because that should be like Detroit, not you. Real talk.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see what happens. But Christmas is a good time frame. So we'll see.
Yeah. We'll see. By Christmas, we'll see where we stand. But good talk as always. NBA standings is going to be in flux for quite some time. But some surprises at the top and some interesting middle of the road teams who should be far more better than what they are right now, but it's still early in the game. But with that, let's pivot to some WWE talk involving a little bit of SmackDown from this past Friday that was taped in Brooklyn, New York, ahead of Crown Jewel in Saudi Arabia this past Saturday on Peacock. Let's talk about the main angle, which is the Bloodline storyline in WWE. And it was the Usos who got back on the same page a couple of weeks ago and Roman Reigns being the outlier and Jay basically telling Roman on Friday that what you're not going to do is gaslight us. We're not going to be side pieces in this bloodline angle. We will be treated as equals. You will not belittle us. You will not bully us. We will be on the same level as family. If you can't accommodate us and you can't adhere to these terms, there is no deal. There is no tag. What did you say? And Roman listened to what Jay had to say throughout this entire promo, and he simply said, yeet. They threw up the ones, and they were unified heading into Crown Jewel. But as we saw, they weren't quite unified based on how Jay was acting in the match. There is still a level of trust that is missing, which totally makes sense because Roman for years ran things in a bloodline with an iron fist. He was the tribal chief. He was the head of the table. And he basically gaslit and manipulated Jay and Jimmy along the way.
Yeah, this is a good segment. Good way to get them on the same page heading into Saudi Arabia.
Yes. So that was probably the only notable thing that I caught on SmackDown that was worth talking about. Everything was kind of like a lot of filler heading into the PLE, which we'll get to right now, which I thought was a solid show. For the last couple of years, WWE has made an effort to make these shows not suck. You know, you get paid millions of dollars every year, tens of millions to be exact, to produce two shows in Saudi Arabia. We know the propaganda involved with that, but you do want to try to give the fans out there a good show because there are fans out there that legit love the WWE product and they want to be entertained and they want to have a good time. And I think that the last few cards have definitely demonstrated that in a good way. And the atmosphere has much improved from the beginning when it was a bunch of oligarchs out there not really being in tune to what WWE is about, just there to be seen. It's good to see a nice blend of fans that are very passionate about WWE, even though y'all ain't getting to WrestleMania. Triple H said, yeah, it's in Las Vegas. If y'all want to come see it, y'all fly out. But our extent of this deal does not include a WrestleMania. And he seemed pretty adamant on that.
Yeah, there won't be any WrestleManias over there. But they've done a good job of establishing the Crown Jewel as a big presentation event. So it won't be a WrestleMania over there, but they definitely have their spot as far as it being a big card, or at least a big card feel.
Yes, I think they might have bumped themselves up to maybe Big Six status in terms of PLEs for WWE, because now they've made Crown Jewel like this annual event where you get to vie for this big gaudy championship belt, which we find out is not going to be actually be carried by the champions. It's all window dressing. Those championships stay in Saudi Arabia to be on display at the WWE, to be displayed at the WWE Experience exhibit. And the winners instead will receive Super Bowl like rings to commemorate their victory, which I kind of like, because now every year, if you are the champion and you're coming back to, if you're coming back to defend your title, then maybe you do become a ring collector. And those rings do look nice. They put some money into it. So there is some incentive about this show now that it does involve a little bit of jewelry, not so much the belt, but now you get some rings along the way, kind of like the in-season tournament for the NBA. You get a little something-something to say you are the Crown Jewel champion for the year.
Yeah, it's a nice touch. And, it's something that, Cody will probably be in the mix, if not champion this time next year. So it'll be a nice touch for him to have the ring. It's clearly a gimmick that Cody loves to bring with him because he's had a ring in literally every promotion he's been in since he left WWE the first time. So he's a ring collector, apparently. So this is a Cody thing. We are officially in the Codyverse. Once you start putting rings on it, you've entered the Codyverse.
No. We've done a good job avoiding the Codyverse for 2 years in WWE. We're not going through that door. We're not hopping in that portal. I beg of thee. We're not doing that.
Yeah, you definitely just put on Beyonce because we are in there. A ring is on it, and we are in the Codyverse.
No, we're not.
Yes.
Okay. No, we're not. We're not there yet.
I don't hate the Codyverse. I know a lot of people do. I don't hate the Codyverse because I think it's fantastic. The reactions and just the unawareness that he has. But we are there. We are in the Cody. The ring is how you open the portal. And once we have that ring, we're in there. So once he comes back to America with the ring, we've entered.
No, we have not entered. All right. This is unofficial. Okay. I can tell when we're there, when he would cut a promo, that would leave me confused. That has not happened yet. So until that I know of, he's been back for 2 years. I have not been befuddled by a promo yet. Now, if it comes down to him speaking in riddles and shit, then yes, we have entered the Codyverse, and I am concerned because it can go one way or another if there's no self-editing involved. Like, you got to pull this man back because he will do the absolute most. But I choose to believe that a ring is not going to trigger anything yet, but we shall see. But let's get to the top of the card, which was a surprise. In that the Bloodline opened up Crown Jewel. They did not main event the show. They weren't somewhere in the middle. They kicked it off. It was Roman Reigns, ZOTC, alongside Jimmy and Jey Uso versus the Bloodlines, Jacob Fatu, the Bootleg Tribal Chief, Solo Sikoa, and Tama Tonga, with Tonga Loa playing cheerleader at ringside. And it was notable that Jey came out separately from Roman and Jimmy. So they're not exactly a united front when it comes to Bloodline business just yet.
Great touch, as it should be. Jey has established himself as a singles, as, you know, the guy. So if anything, you know, this actually makes perfect sense, and it's as it should be. Jimmy is fully aligned with Roman. You know, he's not his own guy yet. You know, you could say he's with the family, but Jey is who he is now. And I actually absolutely love that little touch about it. And yeah, Roman absolutely was like, yeah, if I'm not going to win, I don't mind being in the opening match. I'm not going to win anyway. So go ahead and get me out the way.
Exactly. Let me fly home faster.
He on his
by
Brock
going
time.
First. Get the jet ready. Get the cocktail shrimp on standby, because I will be in and out of this place real easy. And I like that. Like, if you're not winning, let me get out of here real quick. Let me go on, take this L, sail a little bit, and then leave in that order, which I appreciate. So the story of this match was Jey was being the babyface in peril for a lot of this match. And when it was time to make a tag, Roman offered his hand saying, tag me in. I got this. We're family. Jey says, on the other hand, let me tag my twin Jimmy. He's got this. And Jimmy was like, okay, but Roman's right there. What's going on? I thought we were on the same page here. So some tension was there during this match, and Jey was the de facto babyface in peril until he made the hot tag to Roman because he had no other choice. And then Roman cleaned house on Solo for a little bit. Jacob Fatu was a beast down the stretch, just running roughshod over both Jimmy and Jey and Roman at one point. And then, of course, in all Bloodline matches, there is an egregious referee bump. Referee goes down for a little bit, and that leads to Jacob Fatu handling business on behalf of Solo, and Solo hits Roman with multiple Samoan spikes, not 25 like he hit John Cena with this time last year, but a couple to pin Roman Reigns clean as a sheet.
Yeah, I do want to go back to one thing you said. As far as Roman and Jey not tagging him in, I want to point out it was the way Roman did it, because the way Roman stuck his hand out was very much the way Roman used to stick his hand out when he would get that real, you know, when they were in control, or, you know, he felt like he could go in and just dominate. He would put his hand out like, don't worry, dude, I got this. I got him, you know? And Jay's at the point where, no, bro. Like, it don't work like that no more. We got this. So if that's how you're going to carry it, then this is how I'm going to carry it. So I, again, Jay, I felt like, was responding to what Roman was doing. Like, everything Jay did was kind of like in a response to see how Roman was going to act, because Roman is still acting exactly the same. Nothing has changed. And I think that's what's throwing Jay off. And it just got to the point where he wanted to win the match. But as far as the beginning, I thought it was very, very intentional that Roman had the facial expression, put his hand out like, come on, this, I got this. And, you know, very much in a tribal chief manner, when Jay is trying to get away from that as far as much as possible.
Yes, great observation as well, that Roman has not learned how to be humble a bit. Just basically how the handoff was like, hey, tag me, I got this. I'm the leader. Nothing has changed. I gave you a little bit of grace here because I need a partner. I've been getting beat up, what, 4-on-2 for the last month or so. You're here now. I can accommodate some of your needs, but otherwise, I'm still the head guy in charge here, and you're going to acknowledge me, and I'm going to play cleanup here. And Jay was having none of it for most of the match, which I enjoyed. So after the match was over, we had the Bloodline go after Jimmy and Jey Uso, and they had a chair wrapped around Jay's neck. And we had Jacob in position to destroy him when Sami Zayn came out to make the save in a great moment as he teased joining Solo's Bloodline. Solo says, join us. We're family. It's all good. And Sami goes for the hug, and he delivers a suplex to Solo, saves the Usos, and Solo is cornered by the Usos and Roman Reigns. And Roman and Sami have an idea. They're not on the same page in terms of execution, as Sami accidentally super kicks Roman as Roman was trying to take out Solo. Solo escapes. He laughs at the miscue by everyone. And with that, we had Jimmy and Jay arguing amongst themselves as Sami was clearly in the middle of this. Was this intentional? Was it an accident? To be determined, as Roman sat there confused as Sami stood on the ramp, wondering, where do we all go from here?
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
1-800-Flowers.com knows that a gift is never just a gift. A gift is an expression of everything you feel and helps build more meaningful relationships. 1-800-Flowers takes the pressure off by helping you navigate life's important moments by making it simple to find the perfect gift. From flowers and cookies to cake and chocolate, 1-800-Flowers helps guide you in finding the right gift to say how you feel. To learn more, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/audio. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/audio.
Great closing angle. Solo Sikoa, the last two crown jewels, has pinned Roman Reigns and John Cena. And in the last year, he's pinned Cody Rhodes. I don't know too many people that have been able to pin Cody Rhodes, John Cena, and Roman Reigns all in the same calendar year. But Solo Sikoa has done that. Just wanted to throw that out there. Again, he won't get a lot of votes for it, but I definitely think his name should be in that most improved category, because I think he's done a great job with this, and I think he's improved a ton with this character. I think he looks better in the ring. Everything about this worked. But the closing angle is what everybody's talking about. Sami with the great kick, great visual right there. The impact looked great. The Usos being split, but not with each other, just on whose side they're going to be on. Jay being a little bit split. Sami being like, I don't have time for this. I came out and helped you. This is what happens. I don't have time for this. I'm not doing this no more. great closing angle.
Yes, I loved it. Nice cliffhanger for what's to come, as we got some more intel on Monday Night Raw about where things stand between Sammy and the Usos. Roman is clearly the guy. He's got to put things back together by humbling himself. Still has a way to go there. One snafu was Jimmy being late for the breakup of the pin. You can tell he was late, like, messy. But overall, the match is pretty good. And I will give this 3.5 Samoan spikes.
I'll go 3.5 as well. It's pretty good.
Yes, agreed. And now it is time to discuss the match I talked about on this show last week that would exceed expectations. And I laid out the case why Scott was skeptical, saying that maybe I was being a little bit too hopeful, a little bit too optimistic, lofty in terms of my expectations. But I must say that the Fatal 4-Way match involving Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill defending their WWE Women's Tag Team titles against Chelsea Green and Piper Nevin and Lash Legend and Jakara Jackson alongside one more team of note. I think I've identified everybody. Damage Control, Io Sky, and Kairi Sane. I think that this match was laid out the way that I thought it would be. Everyone was showcased strongly. I thought this was a well-booked, well-wrestled match. Crowd was into it for the most part. I thought that everything they did flowed. One hiccup on the top rope by Io, but she cleaned it up real nice. But I really thought that in terms of execution, everybody showed up, and I was right. It was a good match.
It was a good match. Definitely elevated by the crowd. It was a good match. It was fine. Nothing great about it though.
Expand on that.
I mean, it was fine. It was fine, but we've seen this before. This is a match we could have saw on Monday Night Raw. It wasn't a standout match, and you could say the same about the opening match. Mm-hmm. It was fine. That's kind of what I meant in my written review. Like, this was a fine show, good show, but that match was not the spectacular match it probably could have been, and that's fine. It was fine, but it was a good match.
And I agree. And I can respect that assessment. Now, I was saying it was a great, amazing match of the year candidate.
Yeah.
Yes, but in terms of what was before us, in terms of who was in the match, I thought it was very good. And I thought the Lash and Jakara held their own. And I still think it's too soon for them to be called up. They need more experience in NXT. But I think this excursion has done them a lot of good in terms of exposure and working with vets out there that can definitely set the tempo. And when things go wrong, they're there to really complement the flow of things. They don't freak out. They don't panic. They go out there and do the work. And I think that this will do them a world of good back at the PC for about a year or more, just to get some more seasoning. But their time will come. I think this has been a great idea by WWE to incorporate them into the main roster for Raw and SmackDown, have them work with the teams out there that has the experience to really carry things while holding their own at the same time, which is going to be a big test for them when those training wheels fully come off.
Yeah, this has been good for them, good for Jade, and just good for the tag division. It's showing there's an effort being put there and multiple teams being involved, multiple teams having a little bit of a story, all being intertwined and whatnot. So the women's tag division is arguably as strong as it's maybe ever been since the inception when they created the six teams just to fill the elimination chamber.
Yes, we've prayed for times like these for a strong division with multiple teams vying for the championship, and you can tell stories and you can get teams over. And when you build people up, those title changes mean even more in the grand scheme of things. So here's hoping we're starting to see that bleed through on WWE TV moving forward. So I will give this match 3 1/4 doomsday devices.
I'm gonna go three black queens, but there's four. Can't do that. We'll say four black queens, but they're only getting 3 stars.
Wow. I don't know how that math works, but
well, I can't say off. Three. I can't just knock one of them off. I can't just be like, well, there's four of you, but only 3 of you are queens, so can't do that. So only they can split up the stars how they want. They can figure that out. All right. But between the four black queens, they got 3 stars.
Scott, math does not add up. The math is not mathing there, but I'm gonna let him have that. The math does not add up one bit. How you gonna have 4 stars and it becomes 3? I don't get it, but you do you.
Yeah, that's how we're on that Steiner math.
Yes, that's even too complex for me. But you do you though. In remedial math, you handle that for yourself.
I'm in there.
I know you are. I don't know how you came up with that calculation, but I'm going to let you have that for yourself. Let you have that moment. Let you savor that moment and say, yeah, this math is mathing, even though it does not compute at all.
It'll work. Oh, it'll work.
In this instance, for you, it will, but not for me.
Got to break the fractions now.
Oh my God, I hate fractions. Let's move on very quickly to our next match, which was Seth Rollins versus Bronson Reed. As predicted, this was going to be a good match. Also as predicted, Bronson Reed was going to lose, but it was how he lost that gave him a layer of protection, especially heading into Monday Night Raw the next day that was taped. And we had Duty to curb stomp on steel steps, on the apron. Super stomp off the top rope by Seth to pin the guy clean. Physical, nice match between two guys that went out there and brawled. You have to remember that Bronson Reed tsunamied Seth Rollins 6 times. So every time these guys meet up, it's going to be on site. There'll be no lockup. There'll be no respect. There'll be no, oh my gosh, let's really adhere to the rules. They went off. I enjoyed it. Seth won as expected, but Bronson Reed still looked good in defeat. And it was definitely apparent based on what happened at the end of Monday Night Raw as well.
Missed opportunity. Bronson Reed definitely should have went over. Yeah, he looked good in the losses, but he still lost. I think Seth definitely could have played into the injury angle, and I think Bronson could have been a nice foil for him down the road to overcome for, you know, whenever he goes after CM Punk when he's champion at WrestleMania or whatever that is. But I think you would have had a nice ready-made monster for anybody. For whatever babyface or heel, whoever, Bronson coming out of this with a win, eating those curb stomps and still getting the win. Seth could have just played it as not being 100% from the injury. For me, this goes as a missed opportunity. I'm going to give it a 3.5. This was easily a 4-star match, but I am not. I just really think they had a missed opportunity, so I'm gonna go 3.5 tsunamis.
That's more than fair. We talked about this on the show a few weeks ago, saying that who should get the W, it should be Bronson Reed. I understand in this case why Seth had to get the win back after what he experienced on Monday Night Raw a couple of months ago. Do I love it? No, but I understand it at the same time. But I do want Bronson Reed to get the dub against Seth at some point, because if not, it's like it's an exercise of like, he's going to be all right. But no, you want to cement that by actually taking a risk and having him beat Seth at some point. And how things are going, they would never have a traditional match. It will always be gimmick filled, which I'm fine with as well. But let's be true to ourselves. How far do you want to take things here? How do you want to present Bronson Reed moving forward as a guy that can be viewed as a monster, that can be pushed, that can be in prime position to win a championship in WWE? How do you do that? You have him beat Seth at some point. they have to take that risk to do it. You're pushing him. You're providing cover with the splashes post-match. I totally get that. But a win over Seth goes a long way towards him getting that credibility as a monster that should be taken seriously, that can be viewed as a guy that can be a main event player in WWE. And the commentary from Cole and Graves, it felt empty because no, until he actually beats a WrestleMania main eventer, until he beats someone that's been in that position, he's still a guy. That's impressive, but he needs that signature win to really push him over the top.
Yep, I agree.
And speaking of commentary, Corey Graves, who has been a very good play-by-play guy on SmackDown before the switch back to color commentator, have not loved him recently on WWE television. Heel tendencies are popping up again, which I get because you want to, you know, provide that a bit of spice on commentary, but I have enjoyed him playing it straight. Hope there's a bit more balance in commentary heading into WWE TV this week, and especially when I presume they make that switch in January with Cole going back to Monday Night Raw with Pat McAfee, and I assume Joe Tessitore would join Corey on SmackDown on USA.
Is that what you think's happening?
Yeah, most likely. Because I think Joe's on a trial run to get that live experience, and he goes to SmackDown. That is my guess.
So Wade Barrett's getting the boot.
Unless they make it a 3-man booth on SmackDown, I don't know.
If anything, the Booker's got to get the boot, and you got to send Wade back to NXT, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Right? I can't imagine them. Like, because I think he's got a nice different voice, and you need something different out there. And which Booker T actually works really well with the NXT. He's sporadic. You don't know what you're going to get, and that works in that environment. So I don't know. I'm not a fan of the 3-man booth. I've enjoyed the two that we've had with everything. Like, so I'm not saying you're wrong, because you're probably right. With Netflix, they probably want to make sure they got the best of the best of the best. But I think Joe will be just fine. I think he's done a real good job. I think he's adapted really well, and he definitely has a sports feel in his voice. So I think he would be fine. But if they want Michael Cole, they want the classic, they want the legend, I get it.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. But I don't want Wade Barrett left twisting in the wind in January, because he's very good as a color commentator for sure. He definitely has a great vibe with Joe, and I don't want them to lose that. But knowing how things go in WWE, they might do something heading into whatever's going to be the teams heading into the Netflix era for WWE in January, as we get to our next match, which was Liv Morgan versus Nia Jax for the first ever Women's Crown Jewel Championship. Match was fine, unremarkable. Overbooked to hell, honestly speaking, due to Tiffany Stratton. Will she, won't she cash in? Who will she cash in on? Will it be Liv Morgan? Will it be Nia Jax? She was conflicted, and Nia Jax scared her at one point, and she ran away, and she came back. It was a lot going on. Raquel Rodriguez gets involved. Dirty Dom gets involved, and that leads to Liv ultimately hitting oblivion on Nia Jax to become the first women's Crown Jewel champion. And Liv is very emotional about this. Like, some elements of who she used to be seeps through. Nice moment for her, but the match was overbooked to hell, and I give this match two oblivions.
I'm gonna give it 2.5 Dom's girls. You know, because Tiffany was like, if I win, do I get him? So I'll give her half of that. I thought that was a great line. So 2.5. And it was cool. Nice win for Liv. Liv's having a career year for her as far as big wins, champion. She's got a ring. She's coming back home with a ring. And her man. Yeah, it's a good year for her.
I definitely agree. Best year she's had in WWE, being asked to basically be the anchor other women's division, which is good for her. And Nia Jax, you know, she's been impressive this year too. A couple of hiccups here and there, but I thought that she carries herself very well as champion. And I do enjoy the tension between her and Tiffany. Where does it go? We'll see. But you know that that cash in is going to happen eventually, most likely with Tiffany being the babyface when it's all said and done. As we get to another match that was supposed to take place, it was Kevin Owens versus Randy Orton. The match never began as both guys brawled at ringside, tore each other apart. We had security and the GMs, Nick Aldis and Scrap Daddy Adam Pearce, trying to, you know, say, shh, let's calm down, public venue, let's have some decorum. And Randy's response to that was RKOing Adam Pearce. And he sold it nicely. So that tells me the GMs can take bumps. Maybe you can wrestle too while you're at it. And after that, Kevin Owens regains control of things. And he sends Randy through a table by the production area as this feud must continue to parts unknown.
I thought this impromptu last man standing match was the best thing on the card. I thought the energy was great. I know they didn't get the match they wanted, but I thought this was an excellent brawl. And Adam Pearce getting an RKO, just whatever score this gets from me, this will get at least half of a star for Pearce take getting RKO'd. If he would have got the punt kick, I'd have gave it another full star. I wonder if this maybe could possibly lead to a Nick Aldis-led team versus an Adam Pearce getting back in the ring-led team. That could be okay. Like I said, I want a traditional Survivor Series match. That'd be a good way to get the GMs in there. But this brawl was great. And I am wondering, are we getting a big SmackDown match, or does this become a triple threat at Survivor Series with Cody, Randy, and Kevin Owens? And then you still have two big singles matches where you could have one at the Royal Rumble and one somewhere in between till WrestleMania. But they've done a good job of building this side quest on the way to the main quest, which is Cody Rhodes.
Yes, delicate balance for sure. I dig it so far, and I'm looking forward to seeing what happens with Randy and Kevin. They're going to have a match. It's going to be under hardcore rules at some point, if I had to guess, possibly at Survivor Series. But I will say that Randy is a very savvy guy because he hit the RKO on the guy he doesn't work for on SmackDown. He says, oh, you don't go here, RKO. I won't be held responsible for this. I probably get fined, but hey, at least when I hit Nick, I hit you instead. And Adam, Scrap Daddy, did a great job selling the RKO. I cannot lie. What he's willing to do beyond that, I don't know. But at least we know that man can sell his ass off when need be.
Well, because he ain't getting no offense in. So, yeah, he ain't got nothing else to do. All we need you to do is take these bumps.
And he does it so, so well, I must say, as this feud between Kevin Owens and Randy Orton must continue. And now it is time to discuss the semi-main event of the show, which was LA Knight and his need to control things after what happened in Game 7 that really wasn't balling. As he defends his U.S. Championship against Andrade and Carmelo Hayes, I thought this was probably my second favorite match on the show. Love the creativity of the match, love the flow. All three guys worked hard. Chemistry was there. The finish, super clever. Loved it. Very creative. Came to a point where it was so good that we're just basically waiting to see who is going to be next in line for the championship, because Andrade did not get pinned.
Yeah. The match was really good. We won't talk about LA Knight crotching himself vertically for no reason, but it's okay. The finish was great. And you know, I just don't know what we're getting with LA Knight continuing his run right now. You know, there's no big heels being built up to take that title. I think it would have been a good way for Carmelo Hayes or Andrade to pin each other, and then they could, you know, claim, especially Carmelo being the heel. him pinning Andrade in this setting, he could claim to have won the game seven. Then you have him running away from Andrade this whole time. LA Knight still has, you know, he's trying to get his title back. You've got two challengers set up. I don't know. But I wonder if we're maybe splintering off so we do finally get that game seven with Carmelo and Andrade. I might even do it in a 2 out of 3 falls match. That way you get a decisive winner. And then LA Knight moves on to someone else. But when you look at that SmackDown side, unless they're about to have Jacob Fatu run wild and take that title or solo, I'm wondering what heels are on that side to even go after.
It's very soft over there right now. And I think LA Knight has been I knew you was going to do it. I set it up. It was an accident. And he was going to pick it up and dunk it. I'm proud of you. We're just so naughty on this show. But in all seriousness, I think that LA Knight has been an excellent champion. He's had some good television title defenses, good PLE matches as well. But as you said, he needs challengers on the heel side and is very thin on SmackDown right now. And you have Melo and Andrade carrying things for sure. And these guys can ball out in a game seven officially. 2 out of 3 falls looks viable to me. And then one of them wins the championship. I think that would be the way to really elevate both guys along the way and also build challengers. I look at what you're saying and you're right. Who else is out there? Is it Jacob Fatu? Is he ready to be in that spot? The answer is yes. But after that, who will beat him ultimately for that title? So they have to really build people up in that mid-card scene more so than just Melo and Andrade and possibly Jacob Fatu as well.
And, there's not a lot over there. The Raw side's got a few more bodies, but we'll see what happens. But I am curious to see where LA Knight, where his direction is going and who is the next foe for him to go after.
Yes, we shall see very, very soon as we now get to the main event of the evening, which was the Men's Crown Jewel Championship match between the undisputed WWE champion, Cody Rhodes, and the world heavyweight champion, Gunther. These guys previously interacted at the 2023 Royal Rumble, and they were the last two standing, had a great battle to determine who would be going to WrestleMania that year. And the answer was Cody Rhodes. And I think that in a traditional professional wrestling match, both guys are very good. The chemistry is everything. And they just know how to lay their stuff in. They build up great drama. They work great together. The crowd was the loudest they've been the entire show because I didn't see the decibel meter go up throughout Crown Jewel until this main event. And I just thought that both guys worked very, very hard. And the story of this match was Gunther trying to put Cody to sleep with the sleeper. Went back to it one too many times, and that allowed Cody to do a leverage pin on Gunther to become the first ever men's Crown Jewel champion.
And he's only the second person to pin Gunther, so that's another big, or on the main roster, I mean, so that's another big spot right there. Yeah, this is a really, really good match. I think they even have another gear in them. They did their best to make fighting over the ring mean something. And maybe next year coming back when one of them has the ring and Gunther doesn't know what it's like to not have a belt in WWE. So I'm sure he'll have some type of gold too next year. But I thought the match was really good. I like the fact that we didn't have a finisher barrage and, big move kick out. You had your regular finisher kick outs, which you expect. But it wasn't like Gunther was kicking out of 3 crossroads or Cody kicked out of the finisher barrage that, Gunther likes to throw at people. And he caught Gunther off guard. Gunther's been finishing people with that sleeper lately. Really good way to have people used to seeing him put people to sleep in a variety of different ways, catching people after they hit him with a big move. Really well done. Four and a quarter rings.
4 and a quarter rings. What do we give the triple threat? I think I'm going to give it 3 3/4 BFTs.
Yeah, I'm going to go. I agree. I'm going to go 3 3/4 of people of color in the match.
And you see color. I see color.
Yeah.
Does someone else see color in that situation? Or do they believe everything is just peachy in terms of color.
All I know is I saw the color eating the lights.
My goodness.
Saw a lot of color eating the lights.
Yes.
I'm with you, Triple H, but a lot of color eating the lights. So we'll see what happens.
Yes, we shall see indeed. Scott's piling on, which I love. Like, we're going to see what's going to happen. He has no confidence or faith at all. It's down at the bottom of the barrel here.
Is there a, can we get him back in the middle of the ring and have a vote of confidence? Where's Christian at? Where's Christian at to get this vote of confidence going? We're gonna get this guy out of here.
And then thumbs down, no confidence.
Yeah, I'm gonna need all that. I'm gonna need all that.
God, the memories of that for sure. And then after the match is over, we have the formal presentation of Liv and Cody being the first Crown Jewel champions. They have their big old gaudy belts that they get to hold for a grand total of an hour before they give them up to the Saudis to say, hey, look at our accomplishments year round, because y'all spent all this money on these belts and we can't bring them back stateside. But here's a reminder of how great you are nonetheless.
Another missed opportunity for them not to be writing their names on them if this is going to be a yearly event, to not have their names written on the belt, especially with as big as the belt and all the room you have on there.
It's a lot for sure. It's now a tradition like no other. And we have a lineage now of Crown Jewel champions blinged out, getting rings every year. Lineage, it is now
too strong of a word to use for this. Let's just... Lineage is too respectful of a word to use for this. We just have an event to do every year.
No, now it's a lineage, Scott. Now there's going to be like...
Lineage is strong. That's, I know, a it's strong word, man.
I know it's strong, but now there's a lineage here. Ooh. There's like going to be like charts now to document who's going to be the Crown Jewel champion every year in WWE. Who is going to be the next ring collector? Like, they have now established this as a standard in WWE to win this gaudy ass belt that you would never wear a day in your life outside of being in Saudi Arabia. And then you get a copy of it via a ring you get to wear for 2 weeks before you put it in a box and you put it up for the next year or so, because none of it matters. But it is still about the prestige and lineage of it all.
I'm rooting for Rey Mysterio to win it next year. Just want to see him hold the belt. I just want to see him hold the belt or try.
You just messy. That belt doggone well. That belt will just fall off of him.
No, it's just going to be, this is his chest. It's going to be right here on his neck. It's going to be stuck on his neck. Pause.
Too late. Enough damage has been done by you. Let's move on quickly as we now bid Crown Jewel adieu. So Scott has given this a decent letter grade of a B. Now, since we've talked it out in the last half an hour or so, have this grade changed in some way?
Nah, I'm going to stick with my B, because if anything, I might lower it down to a C+ to keep it at a buck. But I'm going to keep it at a B. I thought the atmosphere was great. The crowd was great. Respectfully, people feel how they want to feel about it, and that's fine. I respect all that. But the crowd is hype. The crowd is lit, and they bring a lot of energy. No, you won't be getting a WrestleMania, but the energy you bring does absolutely elevate these events.
They do. They make you pay attention. They keep you awake. They're better booked. They do lend themselves to surprises, some good moments here and there to leave the fans feeling good about things. They don't leave the show upset. They seem satisfied by what they got for 2.5 hours and not a second more. This was not a marathon show that went for 3.5 hours. It was a hard out before the three hour mark hit, which I appreciated. So
with an extra match.
With an extra match on top of that. And Triple H is sneaky too. He said, listen, because the Prince threw an extra $25 million, I'm going to give this man a 6-match card. But what we're not going to do is do 7. So I'm going to just have KO and Randy brawl. That'll be like a cop out for me because I can't do the 7. I can give you 6 at the minimum.
Yeah, that dude really don't be trying to do give away no matches. that dude would do everything he can to not have a match. Like, God dang. Just you should have just had like a missed. You should have just told Logan, hey, Logan, we need you to come and host the Logan Paul session or something and have them on instead of advertising the match. But it is what it is.
Paul said, listen, I'm sweating over here. I have a 5 match minimum for my PLEs. Because this man is paying me $150 million, then you know I at least got to give him a 7th match and still cop out. You still got your 6. But hey, I make it work. I make it do what it do. And Triple H is wild for that. Truly, truly wild. But I digress. As we now get to our final report card for Crown Jewel. So Scott, after discussing the show, cover to cover, the highs and lows, what is your true final grade on a scale of 1 to 10 tiers?
Oh, I'm sticking with the B. I'm gonna go with a 6.5. Solid 6.5. 6.5 tiers.
Man, hey, it's part of how things go. The highs and lows, the ebbs and flows. And I will also give this show the same grade, B+. If I was going to grade on the salty scale, I'll say a good 7 out of 10. It was easy breezy. Yeah, I give it a 7. Give it a 7. I enjoyed it, you know. You got 6 matches, not the 7. You know, Triple H reneged like he playing spades. But hey.
That's 3 books. That should be 3 tiers right there. Then that's 3 books. That should be 3 tiers. You reneged in spades. That's 3 books. So
I know.
That should be 3 tiers.
But he still gave the man 6. He gave him 6. He didn't give him the 7. He gave him 6.
That's what you should have gave him too.
No, I'm going to be decent because the wrestling was pretty solid. I wasn't bored. Appreciated it. We got the cop out, of course. Because Triple H says, I ain't doing 7.
Great brawl.
It was great. I enjoyed it. Kevin being a troll with the cowboy Bob Orton shirt, like he repping all these families for his former friend saying, listen, I loved your fathers. I don't love you. I mean, that's cold. Like, I respect your fathers. I respect their side of the family, but you, fuck you, Randy. Fuck you, Cody. I love Dusty and Cowboy. What about it? They're my fathers if they were still here. Bob's still here, but hey.
Yeah, we still got Bob. We still got Bob. He still got his cast on.
After 40 years, just doggone shame.
No, that thing stink.
You know it do. It's been through some things. Sweat, ointment, just
gangrene.
Cannot gangrene. Gangrene is a level of sick that I cannot believe you just said.
I mean, for something to be on your arm for 40 years, there's got to be some bit somewhere. Like, I know they're taking care of it, but like, there's no way you can avoid it. It's had to have been removed.
Yes, and cleaned and replaced.
And they found some gangrene in there. They was like, good thing we got this off. Good thing we got this rid of this.
No, I'm laughing at some gangrene. not whole gangrene, some. A portion of gangrene.
It's a little speck.
A speck of gangrene. Which is impossible, by the way. Because if it was a speck of gangrene, like, come on. It's whole gangrene, and the entire arm would be amputated. Let's be for real.
Nobody want that. But there is a little speck there. We trying to stop the spread. Okay.
It's not a fungus, Scott. It's fucking gangrene. God. Do you not know how medicine works? It's not gonna be a speck.
Listen,
it's gonna be a full blown infection.
Your boy watched a lot of Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman, okay? I know exactly how all this works.
Oh my God. You have dated yourself and me by so much, because I love our show for this reason alone. Because if you remember Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman, that was a show, okay? That was informative television every Saturday night, followed by Touched by an Angel.
Watch that too.
Yes.
Saw a white woman pretend to be a black woman and didn't know what to do.
I knew
all of a sudden she was healing and she was back white again. Everything was all good.
I knew you were going to bring up that episode.
Just saying.
And it actually happened. And this woman, this angel that the Lord selected to do his work on earth, was in the woods. This actually happened, ladies and gentlemen. Google it. Uh-huh. It's on YouTube. She went in the woods because the racist was running after her as a black woman. And she said, Lord, please make me white again. She said, I have lived this experience too long. This afro is itching my scalp and I am ready to be white again. That actually happened.
And told them white men, I don't know where is she at. I don't know where she went. I think she went that way. Go get her. Go get her. Go get her, boys.
Oh, my God. And you think we're lying. This actually happened. Just we're not making this up.
Quick Google search. You'll find it. You'll find it. She, and you ain't never seen nobody pray so hard to be white in their life. Ain't never seen it before.
No.
Had me questioning what I had going on. Hey, wait a minute now. Hold on. Am I praying wrong? What's going on here? All right. Sorry.
Oh, my God. I just knew as soon as I mentioned it, like, you was going to go to the episode that is the most egregious.
That's the first one that comes to my mind whenever I think about it as an adult.
Because it's so messed up. Like, how did that clear CBS back in 98? How did that happen?
They thought they were doing their thing. Oh, my God. You guys are you're just about everybody. We appreciate it. And look at what you're doing for black people. They're going to want to be white.
Oh, my God.
That's probably what they were thinking. That's probably what they were thinking.
Yes, that's the takeaway. Like, listen, whiteness is the way to go. That was their probably thought process when they did that episode. Like, my God. But that actually happened. You think we're making this up? We're not. Google it. It's on YouTube. Laugh. That's all I have to say. It's like a parody. It's like Dave Chappelle for the Chappelle Show got inspiration from that episode.
If you put laugh tracks on it, you would think it was on Saturday Night Live.
For real. Legit. Honestly speaking, like, it was some kind of infomercial, but it was an actual episode that aired on network television in the 90s. No lie. Dr. Quinn still wins. Just saying.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't remember offensive episodes of Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman. She did her job. She treated her patients. And
sure,
she
we can find some.
It's possible that you have to probably dig deep and find one or two, but she handled her business and she got her man, and good for her.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure Dr. Quinn gave a brother or sister some certain food that they assumed that they eat and you were not. So I'm just saying, I don't want to look too hard, but if I had to place a bet, I'm gonna just bet that they probably did.
That's going to be your homework assignment for next week. Go Google an episode of Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman, and find the most offensive episode and just say, this is what we've been talking about.
Gladly.
Yes. And I do want an actual report next week, the Dr. Quinn portion of our show.
I would definitely have the medicine from Quinn.
Yes. In honor of Jane Seymour, you must do it. All right. Wow. This took so many turns. My God, the CBS Saturday Night Block wasn't a moment, y'all. It was a moment in time. Oh, my goodness. But let's get to Monday Night Raw, which was taped in Saudi Arabia the next night after Crown Jewel. And we kick things off with Liv Morgan being our inaugural WWE Crown Jewel Women's Champion. She was bragging about her victory, but she didn't brag long enough because we had Jade Cargill and Bianca Belair come out there. And Liv said the quiet part out loud, saying, "You're just together because of these tag team titles, because one day one of you is going to turn on the other. I wonder who that could be." And then Bianca pops Liv in the face. We have a brawl. Adam Pearce breaks things up. Magically, he's recovered from what happened to him at Crown Jewel. And we have a battle royal to determine who will face Liv Morgan for the Women's World Championship. And the final three were Bianca. I take that back. The final four was Bianca, Jade, Lyra, and Io Sky. And we had Liv and Raquel eliminate Bianca and Jade. It came down to Io and Lyra. Lyra and Io have great chemistry. We saw that when they were competing in the Queen of the Ring tournament earlier this year. And being the final two, you really see if they are given a chance to have a full-blown feud for a championship, they would deliver. But ultimately, it was a surprise with Io Sky getting the W by suplexing Lyra on the hardest part of the ring. You guessed it, the ring apron. And then Io is such a badass. She's in the bridge, head like bent, like she's in the pose celebrating for like a good minute. Io rules. Great victory for her. And I think her and Liv is gonna have a great match for the championship. Will a title change happen? I don't know, but it wouldn't shock me because Io is so, so, so great.
Yeah, this would be good for EO. Good little title match. And Raquel and Liv plant the seeds for Jade and Bianca.
Yes. And we know Liv is teased. I want those titles too. And that is planting seeds. Who's going to turn on who? I still got dibs on Bianca Belair because all roads lead back to Bayley. We're not going to forget that. Long-term storytelling is a very good thing in WWE, and they'll pivot back to that when the time comes. As we get to the New Day versus the War Raiders, and this is all about Xavier Woods trying to be the leader of the New Day, and it was very smart of the commentary team to note that Big E mentioned the tension between Kofi and Xavier as of late, saying, "In the New Day during my time there, there were no leaders." So I don't understand what Xavier is trying to do here. And at one point, Kofi is whooping ass, cleaning house, handling business, got the win in hand, going for trouble in paradise. And then Xavier makes the hot tag, trying to get the victory for himself, gets set up and loses immediately. So therefore, that tension between the New Day continues, as the announcers also noted that the anniversary of the New Day forming officially is at the end of this month.
Yeah, they'll get a good reaction when Big E comes back. I'm sure that'll probably happen on a Raw, but good win for the War Raiders.
Definitely getting reestablished. And I also loved the tidbits of what both guys have gone through in the last 10 years regarding their injuries and surgeries and how they have to work differently, because we know those guys can ball out, but due to neck surgeries and wondering if you could ever wrestle again, they have changed their style. They're still bruising, they're still athletic, but they are wrestling in a different style that is going to prolong their careers in WWE.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have The Miz at an undisclosed location being tortured by Uncle Howdy. Thoughts, Scott?
I haven't seen it yet. I haven't seen this part, The Miz clip, but I will probably not check it out. Doesn't sound interesting.
Well, first of all, your bias is bleeding through. As a journalist that has a built-in Miz bias, you must cover this for the record. Your guy is somewhere in the woods being punked out right now. He's been away from his family for at least a week, apparently, and he's being tortured by Uncle Howdy for past sins. And it was very clever for Uncle Howdy to showcase when Miz had his Miztourage with Curtis Axel and Bo Dallas. So those sins and those past misdeeds are coming back on him, and deservedly so.
This would be a nice win for the Wyatt Six. And, Miz is just there to eat pinfalls and to make goofy faces for stuff like this.
Definitely so. We shall see where we go from here. as we get to Sami Zayn coming out to explain what happened this past Saturday at Crown Jewel when he made the save for Jimmy and Jay, but not so much Roman. And Jay comes out immediately and says, "Hey, what's good?" And then Sammy's like, "I came out here for you and no one else." And Jimmy gets a little salty about that. And then he really gets offended when Jay says, "Hey, Sammy's family. I made that mistake last week to say he wasn't, but he is family. He is Sammy Uso. And I think that we need to have a family meeting on Friday Night SmackDown amongst ourselves with Roman at the head of the table to discuss things so we can really get on the same page." Now, will they all line up at the same time heading into Survivor Series War Games of Vancouver? Probably so. But as Sammy says, "I've gone through the trials, literally, of being an honorary Us. I've been there, done that. I've proven my worth. Only time I turned was when y'all wanted me to really go after Kevin, which I didn't want to do." So that built-in story is there. The tension makes sense. And now it's all on Roman to make it right, because Jay still has some serious trust issues, but he's willing to work it out if Jimmy is in. And so far, it looks like Jimmy has one foot in, one foot out, but we'll see how it goes on SmackDown.
Yeah, this will be going through both shows. So we got a lot of chapters to take, a lot of beatdowns, a lot of saves to come. But this will be the four. The OG versus the new bloodline. Sammy will be there by Survivor Series.
Yes. The build starts now. Love the slow burn tease of it all. I'm here for it. We're out of the first game in this series. It's like game three. We are in the fifth inning, and we're just waiting for more things to happen regarding the formal bloodline reunion.
Yeah, it's on the way.
Yes, for sure. As we get to the main event of Monday Night Raw, which was a fatal four-way match to determine Gunther's next opponent for the World Heavyweight Championship. It was Seth, who beat Big Bronson Reed. We had Dominic Mysterio, who beat Damian Priest last Monday on Raw, and I still can't believe that was the main event. Damian Priest, who was the former champion, gets his shot as well, alongside Sheamus, who's beaten Ludwig Kaiser recently as well, to get back on top of things in the championship chase. I thought all four guys did a great job, maximize their minutes on screen. And it came down to Big Bronson Reed coming out to basically take out everybody, including Seth Rollins, as he tsunamied him through the announce table. And that left Seth out of commission to be in this championship match. And it came down to Damian Priest and Dirty Dominic Mysterio. And hey, Damian handled business, got the W, and he will face Gunther at a date to be determined.
None of this makes any sense. The Seth Rollins Bronson Reed thing is completely backwards. This is Bronson should have won. It's Saudi, and Bronson should have been in this match, and Seth Rollins should have came out and said, no, I'm not done with you. I don't care what your plans are. And he should be on a revenge tour, and that should be his big match at Survivor Series. Getting his win back, you know, coming back and, you know, exercising that demon that he had. Instead, we're just doing things backwards, running our wheels with a feud. So it is what it is. At least we'll have a good match. Dominic Mysterio, he beat Damian Priest last week, and that was supposed to give him a title match. So why is he in another fatal four-way for a title match? Are we just pocketing title matches? Yes. Is he just, is that what's going on? Or is he just pocketing title matches? I got these two set up. I was seeing if I could get another one. and I was just going to line them up for next month, or maybe do it like once every 2 weeks or something like that. Like, what are we doing? And you put the guy that just lost, Damian Priest, in the match? None of this makes any sense. And the 50-50 booking of you give Damian Priest the win back over Dominic Mysterio. None of this makes sense. Sheamus is right there to either win or take the loss. Either one. He is right there. He's the odd man out in the match anyway. He's right there to win or take the loss. You just had Dominic win a main event of Monday Night Raw over Damian Priest. Why just make seem like that didn't happen? Sheamus is right there for the win or the loss. So none of it made sense to me. Damian Gunther will be a fine match. It'll be a good Raw main event for Gunther to beat him, and then CM Punk will show up afterwards at the end of Raw face-to-face, and that's how we'll get our match.
Great prediction. Totally see that happening. I was also bewildered by this matchup because of Damian Priest losing to Dirty Dominic Mysterio. Like, and I love Damian Priest. You know this to be true. But in terms of booking, this was stupid. Like, how do you be in a match that Dominic beat you for the week before, even though it was cheating? I get it. But how do you get in the match? It doesn't make any sense. Like, Seth gets in because he beat Bronson Reed. Yeah. He won. And then he said, well, bump that. My resume says I should get this match too. I've been in the game 20 years. Like, well, Seth, let's subtract the 20 and focus on the 11 or 12 in WWE. You know, that resume speaks for itself. And then Sheamus, he's been winning. That's justifiable. Damian Priest was the odd man out because they wanted to be cute and try to give Dirty Dom a little bit of shine, but at what cost in terms of logical booking? And that made zero sense, as you said. I'm glad the Priest won and he will face Gunther. I really enjoyed their match at SummerSlam because I thought that Damian Priest hit harder than Gunther, and Gunther might have receipts ready to go to, hey, you got me once, you're not going to get me again. Could be a great Raw main event down the road. Could be something that could be featured for Saturday night's main event in December as well, as they need to build that show. So that's a possibility that will be the bridge to CM Punk coming back, as I do expect Punk and Gunther to fight for the championship potentially at the Royal Rumble. And I do see Punk probably winning to be the champion heading into WrestleMania against Seth Rollins, who could win the Men's Royal Rumble heading into 2025, I should say. So we'll see. The possibilities are there to set this up to make sense for one of these guys to win the championship to headline a night of WrestleMania next year.
The Saturday night's main event. I like that idea better. That's a nice hook. CM Punk showing up there, that actually works a lot better. I could see that being the Survivor Series main event, Royal Rumble. I think that's kind of where you have CM Punk have a nice defense against somebody. Maybe you run the match back. But I really like the Saturday night's main event, because this whole time I've been thinking it's probably going to be Gunther and Goldberg, but the Gunther Damian. I guess you still could do Gunther Goldberg and have CM Punk show up at the end. You absolutely still could do that. But I'm going to change it. CM Punk doesn't show up at Raw. He'll show up at Saturday night's main event after Gunther retains.
I agree. Either scenario works for me. I'm here for it. And gotta bring some spice to that show. I mean, the name brand is going to sell itself, but the card would definitely push those ticket sales over the top in terms of the show being sold out at the Nassau Coliseum next month. To wrap up, a very fun live event year for WWE, and a hidden gem for Monday Night Raw that I'd be remiss if I don't mention is Dragon Lee versus Chad Gable. This match was great. Dragon Lee has been, like, you know, treading water lately due to not being booked on Monday Night Raw and not winning matches, but he's been winning lately. And this match against Chad Gable really demonstrates how great he is if you give him an opportunity to go out there and put in that work. He just needs the reps to really get over with the people, and he will. So this comes down to, once again, Paul Levesque putting trust in someone that you called up from NXT, that you said he was going to be a lifer down there. He's going to get that main roster push, but now it's time to push him by giving him win after win after win to build him up to be possibly in line for the Intercontinental Championship at some point.
No.
Not to win.
Not even to wrestle.
Dude, come on now. Yeah. You think he and Braun won't kill it?
Oh, I think they'll have a great match.
They're not going to put him in a position to challenge for the Intercontinental Championship. Nope. Rey Mysterio? Yeah. They'll definitely feed Rey Mysterio to Bron Breakker. They're not going to do Dragon Lee. They won't do it. They'll have Dragon Lee in a nice like 6-minute match on Raw with Bron Breakker for him to run through as he builds his feud with Rey Mysterio. But they ain't got love for Dragon Lee like that. They don't have love for him like that.
You're not wrong. But with all things, anything can happen in a short amount of time.
Anything can happen.
So
honestly, that would be a great Netflix match to have.
It would.
You know, that's a great type of match to bring in those Netflix viewers that you're probably going to get. And just to have a guaranteed great title defense for Bron Breakker. So I'm not opposed to it. I definitely agree with you. The match would be great. It'd be a great match. Just don't see them having that type of faith.
Yeah, we're going to see. We're going to circle back on this, save the audio. The Scott says this will not happen. And then watch. It will happen.
Next week.
Next week on Monday Night Raw. Dragon
Lee versus Bron Breakker for the IC title.
Yes, out of nowhere. Just to spite Scott. Like, I got something for you. So don't be surprised.
If it happens, I'm going to just need them just to send me a check. They ain't got it. Or send me a belt. Send me a belt. Okay. I'm cool with that too. Because clearly you heard something. You heard me or you heard Keela, but I'm going to need some type of compensation. So I'll take a belt.
Look at you. Look at you saying, give me duplicate. Give me that. Give me the crown jewel belt, actually.
Nah, I'm good on that. I'm good on that. Nah, I ain't gonna have me carrying around blood, man. I'm good on that. That is bad juju right there that I will not be having around toting with me. I'm good on that.
Yes, even if it's like a replica, like, dude, that's still too much.
Nope. Yeah. You keep that. You know what? Keep your compensation. I'm good. I'm good, WWE. I'm good.
Scott standing on business, and I can appreciate that. And this wraps up our Monday Night Raw review of what went down in Saudi Arabia during the taping overseas a few days ago. But now it's time to discuss the one thing that could go either way. What is the one thing, the one match that stood out to Scott this week? I can only imagine what this answer is going to be.
Well, you know, I thought AEW had a nice match with Timu Randy Orton out there. I mean, Mr. Kyle. You know, I thought they had a good match. And you know what? I got love for TK. He looked out for his black friends. Shout out to Private Party. Nothing but love for TK this week.
Oh, look at there. Look at you being diplomatic. Look at you being reserved.
I'll give him that. You know, shout out to them. You know, he still has American History X running the show as his lead character, but shout out to Private Party.
And with that, I'm very proud that Scott showed a modicum, an ounce of restraint today.
Just because of that. Because if he didn't, you know, I'm sure somebody would have got curb stomped.
My silence says it all because I really can't believe it. Truly.
Like I said, love for Private Party, man. I can't knock what you got going on right there. Did a good job. Shout out to the Bucks. You know, nice match. But we'll see what happens next week.
Yes. And this has been a 5-year journey. I'm glad it culminated with them getting the W. Like, they legit waited 5 years, five, to win the championship. They weren't forgotten about. They weren't left behind. Well, so that's good to see. True. Well, listen, they were left behind.
They were definitely forgotten about.
Yes, they were forgotten about for 4 years. that just got found a couple of months ago. And they said, well, let's run with it, because after 5 years, you need to actually do something else besides beat the Bucks for nothing. You got to beat them for something. And they did. And that was a big victory for them. Long overdue. Hope they have some time. I hope they have some time to be champions and really enjoy this run and embrace the people who are with them every step of the way. Very similar in terms of crowd interaction and vibes with Jay and Private Party, which I love and appreciate. So he was hoping that their run is pretty good heading into the end of this year. I hope they have a lengthy run, but we shall see.
Yeah, we'll see.
Scott has zero confidence.
I wrote thumbs down.
Wow.
Just say it, man.
Wow.
Looking forward to FTR taking those titles off of them.
Wow. Wow.
Next week here on Collision.
No, it will not be happening next week here on Collision. It'll be on Full Gear. Stop it.
No, it'll be this Wednesday. It'll be this Wednesday because they're going head to head with NXT. So you know you have the former NXT champions win the titles.
Oh my goodness.
That's why they got Adam Cole and Aleister Black facing off. Because the two former NXT champions going head to head against NXT.
You're not slick.
You're not slick. You should have just cut. See, Keela, you should have just cut it off. You should have just went ahead. But now, see, he ain't slick. He know what he's doing. The two faces of NXT you got facing off. That's the top header on his graphic is them two. He ain't slick.
I knew it wouldn't last. Knew it wouldn't last. You would point out the flaws in all of this, as I knew that you would. And, man, you know, facts, though. You're not lying, even though you are very in your face with it. As I figured you would be. You couldn't resist. I knew it was too good to be true. A little bit too clean and narrow for this to end on a happy note. But here we are nonetheless. But this is a wrap officially on the wrap right here on the Fight Game Media Network. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I want to thank Scott for joining me as we recapped Crown Jewel and the highs and lows from Monday Night Raw.
Thank you for having me. As always, it's a pleasure to chop it up and talk all things WWE. I look forward to another good week in wrestling and big day coming up. Big day.
One of the biggest.
Hey, shout out to American Made. We're going to see how they feeling. We're going to see what type of promo and how their energy is next week.
Listen.
We're just going to see how things shape out next week with American Made in particular.
Listen, I just hope that my boo Julius is gonna be all right. He gonna be okay. I'm gonna slot him by 15 cheddar biscuits. He gonna be all right.
You ain't gotta worry about who he voting for. Brutus, on the other hand, you ain't gotta worry about Julius. I'm gonna go ahead and tell you about you ain't gotta worry about Julius.
I know
Brutus and Ivy, you know, I don't know about them two, but you ain't gotta worry about Julius. He good in the hood.
Yes. Yes, he is. Okay. Yes. Let me stop because, you know, let me control myself now.
You need to calm down. I already hear you getting excited. All right, let's go. I can hear you getting excited. Let's go. Let's go.
Julius is my favorite Creed brother for many reasons. Don't leave that alone. Okay. All right. We're done. Because yeah, Julius is my weakness. I'm just
here. We go.
I am stopping. I am controlling myself. Let's stop that right now. Okay. So it is a very important day for America. Shout out to American Made. Hope it works out for you. However it may go, Julius is going to be happy by the end of the night.
Hopefully.
You know. Oh, I wish I could comfort him during this time, but it's going to be all right.
Crazy.
I blame you. I do. All right. So with that, that's a wrap for all things WWE this week. NXT is going down from the 2300 building for ECW reunion night, going head to head with Dynamite after Election Day tomorrow night. And we'll talk about that next week. it's going to be a fun show. I'm going to be here for the atmosphere of it all. And hopefully it's going to be a good party scene and see what numbers they pull in, considering where we're going to be as a country come Wednesday. We shall see. But until then, enjoy the rest of the week. For WWE, got still NXT and SmackDown to look forward to this week. So for myself and for Salty Scott Young, that is a wrap for Crown Jewel and Monday Night Raw. Until next time, take care. Bye-bye. Julius, you know where to find me. Cheddar biscuits all day at Red Lobster.
Wow.
Out of bankruptcy. Praise God.